Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 15th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Nami Abuzied, the president of Launch Vegas, on how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted his hometown and what a recovery will look like. The GGB podcast is brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. If there's pavement, you ain't put your shoes on. If there's dance floors, you ain't made a move on yet. If there's anyone with a finger on the pulse of Las Vegas, it's Nami Abuzied, who came to town nearly 20 years ago. He has held executive positions with the Las Vegas Sands, Wynn Resorts, and the Golden Knights of the NHL. Several years ago, he formed Launch Vegas to help companies looking at the coming boom in town to get acclimated and hit the ground running. But then COVID-19 hit and the world changed. Las Vegas became a ghost town for 3 months, and even now, it's attracting a bare minimum of visitors to keep the casinos running. Abuzied talks about how the city will rebound and what key elements are needed to return to profitability and a semblance of normalcy. He spoke with me at the GGB offices in Las Vegas in July. With the street of grass. Hey, I wanna hold you, but I don't wanna hold you back. Nami Abuzied, thanks for joining us again on the podcast. It's good to see you. It's been a while since we got together. I think the last time we were looking forward to 2020, and unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. So, you know, it's been so devastating for Las Vegas. You know, we still see 70% less revenue from strip hotels. How devastating has this been, and is it how long is it going to continue to be?
Yeah, thanks, Roger. I appreciate you having me back. Always good to talk to you. Really, as a Vegas resident and someone who's focused my career here the last 20 years, I think that it's really difficult to see a destination market like ours come to a crashing halt, especially when we've invested in assets like stadiums and meeting space that has really diversified our customer base. And then all of a sudden, Vegas became a regional gaming market, this past June.
Sure.
So really challenging to kind of come back to that reality that because of travel restrictions and because of COVID, which was really just an external shock to the system. It was no fault of this, of Vegas or any place else as a destination market. It's really hit every industry from travel and tourism to Hollywood, to retail. So it's really no fault of our own, but this will be an inflection point where we're going to have to either adapt, pivot, accept new realities, or else we're going to really see some hard times in the next 2 years. I think that the convention business is going to really take some time to come back. Mm-hmm. I think the rapid adoption of things like Zoom and technology, you may see a hybrid meeting structure, going forward where instead of 180,000 people come for CES, maybe 15,000 thought leaders come and 160,000 stay home and dial in on a Zoom. So I think it's going to take some time for a destination market to come back. Conventions will take longest. But if there's a vaccine in the fall or in the winter and people have confidence to come and have a leisure vacation, I think Vegas will come back.
Yeah. I think that the vaccine, unfortunately, is probably the key. But you got to have confidence that it works. Who knows? I'm certainly not a medical professional, but it seems like that's going to give the people the confidence to return.
Yeah, there'll be pent up demand, no doubt. And generally, Vegas is seen as a value based destination where you get a lot for your money. And before they're going to go to Europe, they're going to take that trip to Las Vegas. So I think it'll bounce back and it'll come back quickly because of that pent-up demand if there's a vaccine. But if there's just cautious travel the next 2 or 3 years and we have to deal with these theaters that only seat 500 instead of 2,500, we're going to have to take our income statements and really level them down for different expectations.
Yeah, I mean, you got to change your entire business model, I think, in that case. You know, when you have to turn off every other slot machine on the floor and, you know, you put all this plexiglass up on the tables with only three players at a blackjack game, I mean, that's not what you expect to get out of a blackjack game or a slot machine.
Exactly. And then you also have to deal with the reality of the furloughed workforce. Do those jobs come back the level of, you know, FTEs per guest and how many are really servicing? And then so when you add in automation technology that probably needed to get installed, but now is going to – COVID will be a catalyst – you're going to see a lot of jobs that just don't come back.
Right.
And then where do those people go? Do they leave a destination market like Vegas and go to St. Louis where there's not as much of a hospitality corridor?
Right.
It's a big challenge.
Yeah.
And it's thankfully, you know, everybody's household economics are different. But, you know, I'm staying here. But there's going to be a lot of frontline workers that – you know, are going to have to face those tough decisions, and I really feel bad for a lot.
Sure, yeah, no question. So, beyond the gaming corridor, beyond the Strip, how has this impacted Vegas? I mean, I still see a lot of locals out, and you know, I don't think I'm not necessarily sure, but I don't think the neighborhood casino, neighborhood restaurants, and things have been impacted as badly as the Strip. What's your impression on that?
Well, I think it's a flight to quality. I think people are going to come back to the nicest resorts, you know, the suburban ones. And you saw when stations reopened, you know, they opened the Green Valleys and the Red Rocks, you know, first and worked their database to feed those more amenity-filled resorts. But I do think when you look at Vegas, if you got a third of Vegas's retirees and senior citizens that, you know, they're the ones whose health – is the most impacted by COVID. So it's that juxtaposition of the young people feel healthy enough to risk it, but yet the older people were the ones that frequented those suburban resorts.
Right.
So time will tell. I think the next quarter of Boyd's and Station, how they report the next quarter, where there's year over year with some normalcy, I think we'll see a lot in those numbers.
Okay. Yeah, I just did a panel of Atlantic City CEOs for when they reopened for Gaming Law Review. I interviewed four of the top CEOs in Atlantic City, and a couple of them told me that the people who are coming back are younger. It's a younger demographic, and I think that's what you're alluding to there, is that the older people who are more susceptible to you know, a severe case of this illness are not coming back, whereas the young people, you know, who don't, you know, just as a normal young person, nothing bothers me, you know. So they'll come back and enjoy it. Could that possibly be good news for the industry? I mean, there's no entertainment, there's no clubs, there's no movies, there's no concerts. So the casinos are really the only game in town.
Yeah, I mean, and I told this. The Review Journal had me look at a survey that a gaming manufacturer commissioned, and it was basically a closed-loop survey of 1,000 people and their preferences during COVID and post-COVID. And it basically said the younger people were going to be the first ones to come back to a land-based casino. Mm-hmm. But it also asked about what were their habits during sort of the lockout.
Right.
And people had tried online gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 in 5 said, who had never tried online gaming previous to the lockout with COVID, 4 in 5 said they enjoyed the experience well enough to continue post. So to me, that tells me the omni-channel operators, the people that have land-based plus online and plus sports betting, have the ability to cross-sell and really manipulate their loyalty program to offer a wallet of experiences where it's, you know, 5 days a week online, but maybe once a month you're going to a land-based or maybe twice a year you're going to Vegas. So I think in the future that, just like retail, omni-channel's everything. I think omni-channel, when it comes to hotel casino, is going to be the future. And I think that, you know, look, regional gaming has come back fastest.
Right.
And Vegas as a destination market is lagging. And that's almost the inverse of what it usually is.
Right, exactly, right.
And so right now, whereas remember a few years ago people were saying MGM and Caesars, they have too much inventory in a flat market of Vegas.
Right.
Now, they have the regional assets mm-hmm. that everybody, you know, craves.
Right.
And you got Wynn and Sands, which have big campuses in Vegas, but no really regional, not as much regional right. exposure. They're the ones that are going to have the, you know, toughest time with U.S.-based revenues. So, you know, those regional operators, you know, they have network effects that
sure.
few others have. So
right.
it'll be very interesting going forward. But I think, you know, the dollar, if you look at the numbers, the regional market has bounced back fastest.
Mm-hmm. So there's just a story the other day that 12 casinos remain closed here in Vegas, although I just read a few minutes ago Mirage is going to reopen, so there'll be 11. But that's still a significant number of casinos that they don't even know when they're going to reopen again. Is that an opportunity for some individual owners to come into Vegas and pick up a casino for a bargain price?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think, you know, Caesars has said they're going to sell an asset on
right.
the Strip.
Mm-hmm.
I think Palms, I have a lot of experience at Palms because
sure.
one of my clients was operating inside of Palms. So post-renovation, I have a lot of experience operating a business inside that environment. If you look at, you know, they bought it for $300. They put $600 million
right,
into it.
Sure.
They're into it for almost $1 billion. And, you know, the goal was to siphon some upmarket mm-hmm. business from the Strip.
Right.
And that was tough in a great market, and
right.
now it's going to be almost impossible in a down market. So that could be an asset up for sale.
Sure.
And some boutique operator could come in.
Or some big company like Hard Rock. I mean,
sure.
I think they'd fit right into that property there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a good referendum will be how does Virgin do with Hard Rock?
Right.
Because
yep.
they don't have a huge database mm-hmm. of Virgin Hotel, but if they're able to use partners and other conglomerates' database to build
well, they have
the
Mohegan operating it, so
yep.
you know, they've got a good Eastern database anyway.
Yeah, so I think it's tough to be, just like we saw with Cosmo and just like we saw with Sahara
mm-hmm.
or SLS, it's very hard to open a boutique hotel with no database, so
right.
you got to lean on those partnerships. I do think that there'll be some assets up for sale and some interesting, you know, everybody outside of Vegas loves the sexy,
sure.
the
right.
sex appeal of Vegas
mm-hmm.
and just to be an operator on the ground. So whether it's private equity, whether it's, you know, a broad-based hospitality company, I think there could be further, you know, M&A activity.
Sure. No question. So, you know, I think casinos have gotten some relief here in Nevada with the legislature cutting some taxes and fees and things like that happening in New Jersey, although it hasn't quite passed yet. I think it happened in Louisiana as well. Is that going to be important for the rebound of the casino industry, you know, federal and state assistance?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, how prolonged this is. I mean, everyone always looked at casinos as sort of that sin industry that was always recession-proof. So, you know, if we are going to be on that list of industries to get assistance, I always marveled because we always said, you know, just give us – let us have the land, make sure we have good freeways
right.
to get to the – and we'll take the risk on everything else. Just like Wynn Boston,
sure,
you
right.
know, when became Encore Boston Harbor – you know, that was my home state, and I was with Wynn when that got approved, and I helped work on the bid. And, you know, the idea of in my home state getting the license, and yet then all the hurdles got put in front of us, surrounding towns, suing us, wanting us to solve traffic problems that had been going on for 50 years.
Right, yep.
You know, this industry gets a raw deal to some degree when it says – they take so much risk. And that was the largest privately financed construction project in Massachusetts history.
Right.
And who else was going to spend $2 billion to remediate a brownfield?
The remediation efforts there were unbelievable.
Exactly. And I think that now I just saw that they won an award for, like, remediation project of the year. But, you know, the risks that we take in this industry are astronomical, and there's no just guaranteed returns on those dollars. And now with close to, you know, 1,000 casinos across the country in over 40 states, when you count the commercial and the Indian casinos, it's really there's no guarantee of those returns. So, but the also the idea in Nevada, where that room tax and other taxes generally propped up the school system and things like
right.
that. My own children are you know, as parents, we had to make the private versus public choice on schools. So it's everything's really interrelated. But the going's been so good for years with the casino industry. So the next, I'd say, 6 to 12 months from a political perspective within the state is going to be really telling, because everybody's always benefited from the largesse of the casino industry.
Sure, right, right. Yeah, no question about that.
FSB is more than just a platform. With more than 100,000 live sporting events traded by FSB teams each year, FSB has the experience to help you launch the most exciting U.S. sports betting operation. Built by experts with years of experience and powering some of the world's most successful brands, the FSB platform has been created to put you in charge of your business. FSB helps by creating online and retail solutions that are supported by an incredibly strong mobile offering with marketing, trading, payments, and all the other tools required to support a world-leading sports book. The FSB team is good, but their technology is great. And now back to our podcast.
So you mentioned the meetings and conventions, we have the new expansion to the Las Vegas Convention Center opening by the end of this year. It was supposed to be open for the CES show, the biggest show in Las Vegas, and they just canceled that or made it virtual. Caesars just opened the Caesars Forum behind the Link project there, and that's what, 1 million square feet as well. So, that it was easy to predict that these are going to be necessary to fill the rooms, but now how do you mitigate the loss of the business with all this extra space?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the economy 4 months ago, Vegas was firing on all cylinders, and you were going to greet 3.6 million square feet of new meeting space,
right.
And by all accounts, that was a sound investment. And so, I like what the convention center has been doing with the tunnels with Elon Musk, the
right.
underground
mm-hmm.
people mover. From someone like Steve Hill's perspective, and I've met with him and spoken to him about this, for them to put $50 million into a tech-driven project that will not only get a lot of buzz but help solve some traffic issues,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a no-brainer. That's
sure,
an
right.
easy victory. And for all intents and purposes, so far the progress has been solid.
Right.
And you know, the thing Vegas never really led in, it never led in tech, tech amenities
right.
for conventions. It
mm-hmm.
led in, yes, we build big buildings, we build a lot of meeting space, and we'll customize, a white box for you. But we never really were that tech-centric. And
right.
now with the nearly billion-dollar expansion of the convention center, with MSG Sphere, with Caesars Forum, there's a lot of new amenities that really are new assets and allow Vegas to compete with Orlando and Chicago and other cities and really get those conventions that eluded us in the past. And it's not just another nightclub. It's not just another
sure.
restaurant. It's truly, I hate to use the word game changer, but it really is. And so is a 60,000-seat stadium.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
And T-Mobile was a really nice ad,
mm-hmm.
and it fit really nicely on the Strip. And it was the first neutral arena that really got embraced by all the Strip operators. So, things were looking up. We were diversifying well. And now I think, obviously – everyone's committed to completing those projects, but we're going to scratch and claw to build that business back.
Yeah, it's going to take a while. You mentioned the stadium, the Raiders having their first season here this year, and no fans. It was disappointing, but I can understand why they did. I couldn't understand how they were going to, if it was only partial capacity, how are you going to pick and choose amongst your season ticket holders who could come to what game? So it makes sense just to scrap it and you start again next year. So is that what's happening in most of these things? Let's come back in 21 and we'll figure out how we're going to move forward.
Well, I think people would love to hit the reset button on this calendar year. I think with a beautiful asset like the state Allegiant Stadium, and I know personally from my experience as CMO of the Golden Knights when we launched, a resident base and a fan's connection to a sports team. I mean, you want everything to go right.
Right.
You want to cut the ribbon on that mm-hmm. building right. You want to welcome
yep.
fans the right way. You want to send the gift boxes with your season tickets properly to
sure.
your early adopters. You know, you want to give them the gift wrap jersey. I mean, you want to do all that stuff. And Mark Davis just said, you know what? I don't want COVID to spoil my relationship with my best, you know, ticket holders. And I don't blame them. And they had such challenges in Oakland. They were building constrained in Oakland. Right. And now they get a beautiful new master planned practice facility and a stadium in Vegas. And why not push it for a year and do it the right way? And you know, if he can stick to that commitment, then great. All more power to him.
For sure. Yeah, it's I think it probably makes a lot more sense to just, you know, reset it next year and go forward, hopefully, you know, with confidence that everybody can return and you know, the excitement will return along with it, for sure.
Yeah.
And the Golden Knights, you know, here they are in the playoffs and doing great, and we can't even see them. You know?
But I know.
It's exciting and nonetheless, and that was an exciting game the other night, and hopefully they'll go to get the Stanley Cup. We'll see. So entertainment is another aspect that is going to be constrained. You know, we saw Garth Brooks was supposed to open the stadium, and he pushed that back. So, you know, how long do you think? I mean, suppose we don't get a vaccine and we have to kind of ease back into it. I mean, can you do 500 people in a 2,500 seat theater and still pay the act enough, and then you know, get the 500 people to hang around long enough to make it back in gaming revenue?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's going to affect everybody in the ecosystem, from the talent to the manager, you know, the agents who take 10%, to the managers, to, you know, the booking companies, to the, you know, the concert operators like Live Nation, you know, to the venue operators. I mean, back in the day when I first started in the early 2000s, when I was booking entertainment at Venetian, people would call us and they had that old mindset like, oh, you know, we want to be your house act.
Yeah.
And I had to tell
you to pay us 20% more than we get anyplace else, right?
Exactly. Pay us and then break us.
Yeah.
So I said, well, look, you know, we don't want a house act. We want someone that brings their own audience. And that's only gotten tougher, actually. That's why you see the deals with Lady Gaga, the deals with Britney. They bring their own catalog of hits and their own audience. And, you know, back in the day where, you know, you were building 2,000-seaters because you thought Broadway was going to come in, now it's 5,000-seaters because you want an A-lister. Mm-hmm. And then if you realize you have to do these pods that space different parties, then the economics change. So, you know, we could, you know, reset the model where maybe you go back to house acts, or the talent takes less, or it's more of a revenue share, or, you know, it's a more holistic product sale where it's rooms, food, you know, entertainment, things like that. So we'll see what happens. But in the short term, you know, you can't rebuild a lot of these $100 million theaters because they're purpose built.
Sure.
So we'll see what happens. But I really hope that the regulators act quickly and allow showrooms, you know, the safety to reopen, because remember, they have the live entertainment tax, so it's subject, you know, to that domain as well. And they chose to kind of make the rulings on casino first and let entertainment lag a little bit. But I think everyone's chomping at the bit. I do feel bad for all the performers, the Cirque performers, the LaRev performers. You know, those people are used to packed houses. And they're also a very special kind of talent that you can't get in every city.
Sure, right.
So it's going to be very challenging. But I do think there's a lot of just natural creative destruction every few years in Vegas of what's hot and what's not. And there'll be a reset. There won't be as many shows.
Sure.
You know, it'll be a flight to quality. You know, you're not going to see 6 to 8 Cirque shows. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to, you know, pick and choose in terms of what kind of overhead gets supported. You know, but yeah, we'll see. But my heart goes out because I love entertainment. And then secondarily, it erodes the value prop of a Vegas vacation.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
You know, because yes, if your casino floor is open and one steakhouse is open, but the showroom's not open and the pools is not like a pool club.
Right. Yeah.
Or if the nightclub is more of a lounge with a quarter of the occupancy, it erodes the value proposition of modern Las Vegas. And I think that's where people are going to start to weigh. You know, what are the switching costs? Can I get this in San Diego? Mm-hmm. Can I get gaming?
Right,
Can I get closer?
Yeah.
You know,
I've been surprised that Las Vegas is still pretty crowded on the weekends because people are driving in from L.A. and Southern California.
Yeah.
And you know, they do have some really quality casino operations down there that are open right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the Pechanga is, you know, as nice as anything in Vegas. Certainly the Morongo is got some expansion going, the San Manuel, and these are hugely successful casinos, but they're driving past them to come to Vegas. So there must be something that Vegas can offer, you know, even though they're really only driving here for gambling still.
That's true. That's true. And but hopefully it's not a prolonged erosion of the value prop so that Vegas isn't, you know, the key to Vegas is it's a destination market that people fly to get to for the most part so that they can have a once-in-a-lifetime experience, a really one-of-a-kind experience. And if that starts to erode, then people start to look for just in basic economics, you look for substitutes.
Right, sure.
And like you said, there's some nice properties in regional gaming throughout the U.S., and they can offer promotions, deeper discounts. They can offer frequency. You know, I think what people really want at the end of the day is they want the VIP-like experience that Vegas pioneered.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you can get it globally or regionally or locally, then all of a sudden, Vegas is more of a notion than it is a physical place.
Okay. So I know your company has lost some business because of this. I mean, you had some of your clients were coming into Vegas and you were advising them. But I have to think that this is kind of an advantage for you, kind of an opportunity for you, because people are still going to want to come to Vegas, and you're going to have to have your ear to the ground here and tell them, you know, how you can get in the best way. I mean, is am I wrong with that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, just like any company, I've had to pivot and revise my slate of services and things like that. I've really, the last 2 years, I've really beefed up my digital, digital marketing, customer acquisition, things like that. When I was in marketing and advertising in the casinos, it was more database driven. Mm-hmm. It was more OTA driven, more traditional advertising. And in the last couple years, everything's gone mobile. It's gone, ad networks.
Right.
It's retargeting.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've tried to do is really marry the traditional with the digital, and also, at the end of the day, casino is a very specific industry that's heavily regulated, that has its set of hurdles. And so those are unique businesses. And so what I help is brands unlock the value in a casino environment or in a destination market. And whether I'm advising Madison Square Garden Company or whether it's Tennis Channel or whether it's CG Sportsbooks, it's really like, how do you get close to your customer and what don't you spend your time and or resources on? And a lot of people end up chasing, you know, tactics down a rabbit hole that never work. And so that's why I'm able to help clients, bridge the gap in their knowledge of opening. Because when you're opening businesses that's hundreds of millions or billions,
sure,
you really need more of an experienced hand. And I was very fortunate in my 13 years with Sands and Wynn to open so many properties in Macau and Singapore and on the Strip and elsewhere, that, you know, you really learn there's a formula to it. And now when you add a layer of digital marketing that allows you to be even more efficient, I think companies really value that. And also companies, they don't want bloated overhead anymore.
Sure, right.
So if they can get a guy that's senior and it's kind of executive as a service or fractional CMO or, you know, whatever you call it, it's for them. If they can buy me for 6 months, I give them that expertise, or 12 months, then they're off and running, and then they can staff up a team that's going to grow with them.
Sure. Right.
So I think that, I have a track record for that. And I think that, when we last spoke, there was $20 billion worth of development in progress in Vegas. I'm just curious of when everything shakes out, how much of that is left.
Yeah, right, right. Well, Nami, I respect you so much. I've followed your career from the Sands to Wynn to the Golden Knights, and now on your own, you're doing a great job. And thanks for sitting down with us and giving us your opinion. It's been a delight to hear it.
Thanks, Roger. I appreciate it, and always good to connect with your listeners. And just thanks for the interest.
of this week's podcast, brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. To learn more about the future of Las Vegas in the wake of the pandemic, visit ggbmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. So we'll see you next week on the GGB podcast.
If you find someone else who deserves you, hope he loves you enough not to hurt you. But if he does, you know right where I'll be. Come back to me.